Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you, dear Kelly?
Oh my gosh. Well, I went to the doctor today and it was so odd. I have high mercury levels. So I was really surprised because I really don't eat that much fish. And the doctor told me, I mean, she's kind of, you know, holistic. So she told me that 50% of mercury, I guess, in your body is caused by the air that we breathe. Wow. So, and she said that some area, like some rainforest recently, they did the air quality and it had the highest mercury levels it's ever had.
In a forest?
Some sort of weird forest.
Wow. I would think it would be the opposite, like in a big city that you'd have higher levels. So, but
no, I don't think she meant like in the world. I think she just meant like they had measured it previously and at this point in time, it's the highest it's ever been.
Oh.
I think
it.
That's what she meant, yeah. But isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Now, where else do you get high quantities of mercury instead of just fish?
That's a great question. Maybe lead, I think. Maybe has to do with it. I don't know.
Have you been eating paint?
Yeah, exactly. Been hungry. You know, Sherman Williams looks good. No, I don't know. It's so bizarre. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Interesting.
So,
well, I hope that gets taken care of.
I know, right? So it's like a whole detox thing I got to do. But it's like all homeopathic and kind of cool. So,
but you said intravenous. You have to get shots.
So I have to. So she's like, "How are you with needles?" I'm like, "Nah, I'm good." She's like, "Okay, great." She's like, "Cause she's gonna do like an IV for like 6 weeks, once a week. I'm gonna get like an IV, like high doses of like vitamin C and some other like." It's really
you'll probably
interesting.
Feel great afterwards.
I'm so excited. Isn't that weird? And then she said to me, she's like, a lot of moms who get this, they actually really like it because it's like a half hour to themselves. So I'm like, how sad is that? You know?
All for medicinal purposes.
Yes.
I have to.
Exactly,
so,
right?
So I'm not taking away from anybody else. Yeah, exactly. Giving back to myself. That's awesome.
What about you? What's been going on?
I was telling you right before we started that I actually took a nap yesterday. I can't remember the last time I took a nap. It was like smack in the middle of the day, and I just like literally, I like hit a wall. My eyes
out.
Just like, thankfully, I had a good break during the day.
Yeah.
And I just decided to close my eyes, and Fitbit said I slept for 33 minutes.
Fitbit. That's so funny.
It was probably the best block of sleep I've
ever exactly.
gotten.
Good for you. I'm proud of you, because I think Thanks. It's really hard for a lot of people to like, to say like, it's okay to relax and to chill out for a little while. It's like we always feel like we need to do and be on it, especially you. So I'm really happy.
So it was good. I was proud of myself. I was like, I took a nap. I rock. This is like awesome.
Meanwhile, in like Japan, it's like promoted that they take naps during the day.
Oh,
they've done studies to show it really helps, you know, and it makes sense. Like after after a little while, I know that initial grogginess, but then after that, you're productive. You're like, you get your second wind.
Yeah.
Let's take a nap right now. See you guys. That's
it. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, so. Anyway, so you had brought us on a great guest last week. I love this. Kira Sultanovich, also known as Kira Sultanovich, right?
Exactly. That's how she called it. Hilarious. So she's a comedian, comic. She's a mom of two, and she was just hilarious. She's been headlined in a lot of different TV shows and things like that, but it was just a really great I guess talk about parenting. And, you know, she was raised by immigrant parents. And so, you know, kind of what was that like? And so I thought that was really interesting, the psychology of different parenting styles, different cultures. Really interesting.
I just found out from my Pilates teacher today that she was actually raised on a kibbutz in Israel.
Wow.
I mean, how many people have you ever met that were raised on a kibbutz?
What is a kibbutz? I've always heard the name and have been too shy to ask what
it's
it is.
It's kind of like a community. Well, it's in Israel, and it's a community living situation. Basically, you live with the same people. You work on the ground. So
okay.
You're like a self-contained environment. So
like a monk. Like that kind of situation.
Yeah, but yes, everything, you know, you raise your own food and you all live together.
That's so cool.
You sleep where you go to school. Where you go to school is where you work. I mean, it's all just this sort of like you know, one-stop shopping community. So she said she loved it. She said it was like the best experience of her whole life.
I can imagine. Yeah. I've always wanted to do that. I think that just sounds so cool.
It's a lot of work, though.
I know. That's what I heard.
You can get up at like 4 or 5 every morning, and it's a long day.
That's what I heard. I knew a woman who did it. Not a kibbutz, but it was somewhere else. It was more of like a Buddhist mentality. And she said it was a lot of work. She had to clean. She was like, yeah, I mean, it's intense. So,
but I think it gives children a lot more discipline.
Let's send my kids
over
there.
Yeah, let's send your kids there.
It'd be good for
you
them.
You could never live with yourself sending your children away.
No, I could never.
I wouldn't be able to live with you
sending
your children away.
No,
they're still adorable. All right, well, without further ado, we have a fantastic guest with us today. But first, before we introduce him, let's have a word from our sponsor.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book, Getting Back on Top, encouraging you to consider using my relationship consulting services where I help people transition from being married to divorced to single, one of the most difficult transitions in life. You can check out some of this information on my website, secondchanceatromance.com. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to 2 very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. And I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. We so appreciate your support of our show. So today we have on board with us Dr. Jeffrey Fidel, MD. He refuses to live his life medicated for bipolar 1 disorder. In near complete solitude, he endured nearly a full year of intense mental anguish, utilizing mainly the ancient teachings of Lao Tzu Tao Te Ching. Did I do that right? I hope.
I think so.
He learned how to connect to a voice originating from his heart. The voice within teaches him that our true identity is beyond thought and that we and the universe are I, also one. Dr. Fidel is now sharing these ancient teachings to help others discover their answer inside. He says, by quieting the constant chattering of our minds, we begin to hear the inner voice that originates from our hearts. By surrendering the thought of who we are, we can begin to accept this inner voice as our teacher. This inner voice teaches us that we are one. Dr. Fidel graduated magna cum laude with a Bachelor of Arts degree from Brandeis University in Waltham, Massachusetts, and he earned his Doctorate of Medicine from Tulane University in New Orleans. And he has lots of hobbies, including classical piano, snow skiing, math, and science. I've never heard of anybody have math and science as a hobby. I love it. Mm-hmm. Currently resides in Florida with his son, Andrew. Welcome, Dr. Jeffrey.
Thank you, Dr. Deborah, and thank you, Therapist Kelly.
Hey, how did you come up with the title, I?
Well, it's just a vertical line is what it is. It's up to the mind of the interpreter how to pronounce it. So it could either be I or it could be one. Mm. Or if the cover is tilted in a horizontal fashion, it could actually be a minus sign.
Wow.
The
underlying thing is that a symbol is just that. It's up to the mind of the interpreter, and its language itself is reductive. It can never recreate essence is unnameable.
I have so many questions. This is so interesting. Okay, so my first question for you is, what was your life like before this whole journey that you went on?
So my life before this was pretty much I went to high school, and then I went off to college, and then I went to medical school, and then did a residency, and then I went into private practice. So it was I pretty much did what everyone else around me did, mm-hmm. live the normal Western life, so to say. And I did very well as a practicing physician. I practiced in both hospital and outpatient settings for about 15 years. And my specialty was MRI and diagnostic radiology. So before what had set up the whole trigger of what had happened to me happened almost 2 years ago when I got divorced and then my dog died. Mm. And when those two things happened in my life, it sent me into a state of shock, so to say. And it's at that point that everything started to happen to me. And that's pretty much what set off the whole inward journey, so to say.
Now, had you already been diagnosed with bipolar 1 a time before that, or when did that happen?
So I was initially diagnosed depressed. Just to give some background, I'm 45 right now.
Okay.
So I was initially diagnosed depressed at age 20, and I started medications at age 20. And then at 28 is when I received my bipolar type 1 diagnosis. And then, so I was medicated for about 25 years, and it's almost 2 years ago that I threw the medications away, and I took this inward journey, and I haven't taken medication since.
Wow.
Wow. And did you have a full-fledged manic episode in your bipolar?
Well, bipolar or any labeled condition is basically reaction to thought. So what bipolar is, I could only know that now because I've learned myself outside of my thinking mind. Mm-hmm. But basically, looking back, what was bipolar was I had constant thoughts in my head of, you know, I feel depressed, I want to lie down, I don't want to go on anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So with those thoughts in my mind, the rest of my being would react to my thoughts in my mind, meaning the part outside of me, the being that when we look at a person, we see the being of the person. We can't see the thoughts in the mind, we see the being. So what happened was I was under the spell of those thoughts, so my whole being became depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can only know now what I did, but I was to shut off my thinking mind, and so then there were no thoughts in my mind, and with no thoughts in my mind there are no more words in my mind, and then my ability to my senses heightened extraordinarily high level. So my ability to smell, taste, touch, all these senses went way up, and so that's labeled as a state of mania. The only problem is that when my thinking mind returned again, it was back into the thoughts of depression. So now my mind was locked in two states. It was either in a state of quote-unquote mania or a state of depression.
I like that you say that states. A lot of people talk about depression as a feeling, and it has nothing to do with feelings. It's
right.
A state of being. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. So I was going to say, so do you feel like this is, a personal solution, like it kind of just works for you? Or do you feel like you advocate this for, in general, people diagnosed with bipolar? Like you feel like, you know, what you did with this inward journey, they can also do and sort of be free of this?
Well, that's a good question. What my book does is it outlines the state of minds that I endured over the year, almost a year and a half, which are pretty much inhumane. And this is why, like you say, I don't recommend that people attempt this.
Mm. Okay.
Because the mind could produce very scary states. I think we see, you know, they have spiritual crisis hotlines. Some people commit themselves. You know, some people take their lives. They act on their thought. I didn't know until I was able to learn myself outside of my thinking mind. When I was entranced in these states of mind, that was my reality, kind of like a dream in an awake state.
Sure.
So that's why I can't recommend people do that, because if their minds start producing these things, they will then go into those states, meaning their minds will, and then they'll be taken away into those states. And it happens very slowly, and that's why I don't recommend it. However, having gone through all these states of mind, I can now teach people what I utilized in order to learn myself outside of my thinking mind. And that's a lot of this has to do with feeling once again, something I subconsciously protected myself from doing, and feeling heartache again, forgiving within myself, all these different techniques that I utilize in order to basically heal myself. But this, like you said, this is not something that I can just, I'm not recommending anyone get off their meds, but my goal now is kind of to treat, to help people to feel again, or go to places inside of themselves that they might be subconsciously protecting.
Did you ever feel like the medication was more harmful to you than helpful as you were taking it all those years?
The medications, you know, they numbed my mind, the medications, so I never enjoyed taking the medications. Whether they're harmful, of course, they have many side effects that, can't be quite known completely, and I think we can see that on all the TV commercials. But in the end, what the medications are doing is they're numbing the thinking minds, because what's making the patient suffer in the end is their reaction to thought. So, you know, whether people take prescription meds or whether they drink alcohol or take illicit drugs, they're quelling the mind, but they're not going to the etiology of where the suffering is taking place. And a lot of that is outside of the thinking mind.
What did you discover for yourself was creating your suffering?
For me personally, a lot of it had to do with my perception that I had been wronged in my life. I had a mental perception of anger that I couldn't resolve, so to say. And this dates all the way back to like my earliest days of childhood. There was certain events that I couldn't get over, and it would create basically a cycle in my mind that the rest of me was reacting to. So I'd walk around almost like in a state of constant, I'd like to say, sympathetic overdrive or adrenaline rush. I was almost dependent on this anger in order to feel alive. It was a rush for me. I lived off of that. So by forgiving within myself unconditionally both other people that I perceived to have wronged me and myself, because then that alleviated the guilt, because I felt I couldn't get over some of the things that I had perceived I had done wrong. So that like healed me of the guilt and anger that I held within myself. And then, like I mentioned before, my ability to then allow myself to bring my mind's attention to places outside of my mind, so to say, like a meditation. So I would bring my mind's attention towards my heart and feel like, what is it? Why am I so afraid of being in this area of my body? So these were months of these types of exercises that I utilized.
I have another question, but I'm going to pause really fast for a sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
Be right back.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book, Getting Back on Top, encouraging you to consider using my relationship consulting services, where I help people transition from being married to divorced to single, one of the most difficult transitions in life. You can check out some of this information on my website, secondchanceatromance.com. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. And I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Welcome back. We are talking with Dr. Jeffrey Fidel, who is the author of a very interesting book called I.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
You have a question.
Yeah, so my question is, I guess, can you give us sort of a quick rundown of how you sort of came, I guess, to encounter the teachings of Tao, if I'm saying it wrong, please correct me, Tao Te Ching, and kind of how you got involved in all of that?
Yes, that's an excellent question. The Tao Te Ching, I wasn't aware of the book. I happened to be working in radiology. One of the technologists there had this book, and I I started looking at this book. I didn't know what it was. And so it was by chance that I, you know, ran into this book. I started reading the book, and first I was kind of reading it with my mind, trying to learn it, intellectualize it. But then I noticed it could be used in a different way, and that's when I really got involved in going through the actual practices of this book, which the book is kind of a guide, if it's used in this way, to reconnect with the original self, so to say, before it ever acquired any knowledge from society. And that's where that book allowed me to connect to, which was pretty much my heart.
Wow.
Neat. Yeah, what a journey. Did you ever participate in any kind of sort of mainstream psychotherapy, or was that...
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
Mainstream psychotherapy, well, I've spoken to therapists. In fact, I've dated therapists before.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-oh.
But the thing with therapy and why it never worked for me personally is that I had a good knack of rationalizing and intellectualizing everything.
Right.
And that's kind of, for me personally, what happened every time is I was... the sessions for me was more about subconsciously getting what I wanted from the session.
Sure.
So to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it never worked for me. Mm-hmm. And this was the hard thing for me, was to be this honest with myself.
Yeah.
Because in the end, a person can't fool themselves. That's why we're all our greatest teachers. There's always that back of the mind. So a lot of the inward journey was getting so honest with myself. And when we say honest with ourselves, that means just that. It's listening to our conscious or our voice within. That's mm-hmm. how we know when we're dishonest with, what do we mean when we say we're dishonest with ourselves? How do we know in the first place? It's because of our consciousness. You know, this is within us. And so the more we listen to ourselves, quote unquote, the more inner peace we experience in life.
So my question is, it sounds like this was ultra healing for you. Now, was this more this book to sort of just put it out there, this is how I healed myself, or do you have an ultimate goal to really help others?
Oh, yes. Well, that's my goal, is to help others.
Okay.
Like I said before, a lot of the things that I want to start teaching people, in the end, only the person themselves can heal themselves. They have to want to go in this direction. But for those that are interested in healing themselves, and this is where I guess I'll come in, because I'd like to teach people the concepts and practices I utilize to do this. So to teach them these practices, they have to have a desire to want to feel within them again. You know, some people might not want to go into places inside of themselves, and I respect that as well. But for the people that do, I think I could help, because then I can teach them how to reconnect with their heart,
mm-hmm.
How to forgive within themselves. And this is the way I think that I can... be of benefit to others.
Kelly and I are usually very happy to be guinea pigs. Do you have a particular experiential exercise or anything you could teach us at this moment?
Sure.
Kelly, I spoke for you. Are you okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know me.
I like that. So what we can do is we could bring something up in our mind.
Okay.
That we might perceive, maybe in our life, we have a perception that someone has wronged us.
Mm.
Maybe it's unfaithfulness. Maybe it's something that happened in childhood. It's something that the mind perceived of as disturbing, quote unquote. And once that's done, that might bring up something, a feeling, so to say, outside of the mind. So I'll let you sit with that. and see if there's something that might provoke, that you might be able to feel in your body outside of your mind.
I've got one.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Should I just share?
Oh, well. So when you brought something up, the question is it producing almost like that there's a threat when in fact the threat is not anything except for the mind's perception of the threat? Like, did it create some kind of physiologic response inside of your being?
I had a visceral response throughout my center in my chest and around my heart.
Yes.
And then I permeated a little bit of heat throughout the rest of my body.
Correct. And that has... This has effects on everything. This is hypertension. This is heart problems. This is GI problems, because it's that very sympathetic adrenaline rush that can have has effects throughout the entire body, not just the mind. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm not necessarily, if you'd like to share it, that's fine. But my point being is that, so I would have someone bring up something in their mind of this nature, and then kind of when they feel that thing around your heart, for example, you said you felt something, then to bring the mind's attention to that area around your heart, I could allow you to do that for a moment if you like, and go there to that area, meaning bring your mind's attention to that area. And not to have, or try not to have any fear of actually going there, and see what that experience is like.
Okay.
We're both doing it. We both have our eyes
closed. If you're listening out there, we haven't left you. We're going inward, hoping our audience will go inward also. Okay. Do you want either of us to share what the experience is?
And while you go there, and this is the harder part, try to not put any words on the experience, but just actually experience it with your mind in its pure essence, meaning not to say to yourself, because there might be words, and I can't go into your mind, but many times when we want to go somewhere where the mind might say, well, you can't go there, or wow, this doesn't feel good. Like, the mind is always trying to put words to it. So part of the practice is going there. It's kind of like a meditation to go there and to feel it without the mind butting in by trying to analyze what the feeling is, just feeling it for the pure experience.
Sure. It is really healing, I have to say. I won't say what my word is because I'm putting my mind there, but there is something healing about that.
Well, I actually relaxed when I did that. It was kind of like a soothing experience of just like attending to it, seeing it be there without judging it or doing much with it, just allowing it to be, and then it sort of started to dissipate.
Yeah.
So even just doing that, I mean, it takes away a lot of the subconscious fear that many people, myself included, before I did this inward journey of feeling again, because I really didn't want to feel ever again. I was protecting myself, so to say.
Sure.
So these kinds of acts can allow us to not be so quote-unquote afraid of ourselves. And these are part of the things that I'd like to teach people to do.
So going in a different direction, I can imagine, have you gotten a lot of backlash or any backlash from psychiatrists or doctors or anything on, I guess, on that front?
Medications, anti or whatever.
Well, I'm just starting off here, so it's going to remain to be seen.
Yeah.
I have offered my services to hospitals, and I have yet to get any response back, so... it's not that I'm out there to say what's right or wrong, because that's up to the individual.
Sure.
And some people, they might just be happy taking pills. I know there might be a lot of people like that, and that's totally up to the individual. I think the ones I might be able to help the most, because human beings are more than just their thoughts and their mind. And that's kind of like what I like to say is not, we're not who we think we are, but we're rather the beings that think.
Mm-hmm.
And by flipping it around in that way, then we see that all human beings are the same. Because no matter what our belief systems are or our thoughts are, behind the thinking mind, we're all that. So that's kind of how I know myself now, the being behind the thought.
I'm just listening to your voice. Have you ever done hypnosis, by the way? You have a very, like, hypnotic sort of relaxing voice. Like, you could almost do recordings or, like, you know, audio tapes about this. It's just very relaxing and calming.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. If maybe I'll have a second career.
Yeah, exactly. Doing
I could. I'm certain. It's good that I wish I could put my son to sleep with my soothing voice, but unfortunately, it doesn't work very well for that purpose.
How old
but
is
I
your
do
son?
Appreciate that.
How old is your son?
He is 8.
Oh,
Andrew.
And he's is your only child?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, so cute. So sweet. So I have a question, actually. How has being a father changed you?
Well, I always enjoy being a father. Being a father, I have a good time with my son. So I guess being a father has changed me by returning me more to being a child again, because I end up doing all the stuff that I like to do, like go to water parks and rock climb with my son, or go to trampoline parks or play video games again. So it kind of got me back more into the activities that I guess I always like to do. That's anyway.
Nice. That's really neat.
And do you ever fear that, oh my gosh, because, you know, bipolar can be genetic. Do you fear for Andrew or, you know, I guess, have you thought about that?
Bipolar, no person is bipolar. What it is it's a reaction to thought. And this is pretty much what I'm going to be teaching. Of course, people have a, you know, that it's a chemical imbalance, that, you know, there's different theories of the mind of what it is. But if you look at the history of bipolar and how it came about and who named it that condition, and you know, before it was called manic depression.
Yeah.
And now I think there's 6 categories of bipolar. So they're just categories of states of mind. But in the end, what bipolar is, or depression or anxiety or any state of mind, is how the being of the person reacts to thought. And so thoughts evolve to help us. As far as I would understand, it wouldn't make any sense for thoughts to cause suffering. It just doesn't make sense. So now that I know myself beyond thought, you know, I'm no longer quote unquote bipolar, because thoughts don't affect me. But this is why I had to go through all those states of mind, which I outline in the book, because to get to this point where I know myself outside of my thinking mind, I had to endure immense mental suffering, which I describe in my book. Mm-hmm. And whether my son is going to have that, it's ultimately up to my son whether he's going to want to take the inward journey, because no one can take it for another person.
Sure.
There are only a few people in the world. I think you might know Eckhart Tolle. He's taken the inward journey. Now, I didn't know it at the time. I mean, this is why I don't recommend people do this, but the only reason I was able to do this was that I did get to the point where I had thoughts in my mind of committing suicide, and this went on for a long, long period of time. But the being of me never acted on thought, so I never took, you know, it was, I never took my life because, you know, I had thoughts in my mind, take your life, take your life, take your life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't know what to do. But I didn't take my life, but I was able to connect to this deeper voice that every human being has that comes from our heart. And like I'm saying, if it weren't for the Tao, I wouldn't have even known that that voice exists. And that voice became my teacher for a year. And of course, I still listen. When I say I listen to myself, I listen carefully to myself. And that means that voice from within that we all have as human beings.
And during this journey time, did you stop working? And when you just sort of focused on, you know, finding yourself, for lack of a better word, or were you working at the same time?
This was the more difficult part as well, because I literally endured a state that would be labeled in today's society as schizophrenia. But I was able to hold on by a thread to reality the whole time. In other words, schizophrenia is a very, very heavy thought mind state. So when I was in this state of mind, auditory and visual thoughts overwhelmed my mind to the point where I almost couldn't see outside of myself.
Wow.
And this is why when physicians are trying to speak to a schizophrenic, it must be very hard to get through to them,
yeah,
quote unquote, because their mind is almost in a daydream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very, very heavy state of mind. Now, this is why I'm saying it's so dangerous, because I didn't know that when you're in the daydream, you don't know you're in the daydream, because you are the daydream,
yeah, right,
when you're in your mind
reality,
like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is why I'm not recommending this. So I was able to make a correlation between, and this is written in my book, I went through a quote-unquote spiritual emergency for 5 months, so to say. I never went back to a doctor otherwise. Luckily, I didn't. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to tell the story today of what had happened to me in my mind. And if I told anyone what my mind showed me, they'd lock me up. But I was able to make the recollection that my mind's visual creations was secondary to unresolved conflicts I had with my parents. And so I left notes all around my house that what you're seeing in your mind is not what you think, but this has to do with unresolved conflicts. Now, if I didn't have, it's a miracle that I even was able to make that recollection, but if I didn't have that, I would have been swept away into my mind-created world, and I'd be locked up for the rest of my life.
Mm.
So, you know, between the Tao and all these things happening, I guess there was a lot of luck involved.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could explain also how your background in math and science may help bridge the gap between the spiritual community and the scientific community. Mm-hmm. That's very curious to me.
Oh yes. So I've always been a mathematician and a physicist. I mean, those have always been large interests to me. But so I went through a lot of the language. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie A Beautiful Mind, but
yes,
I was locked in my room for months, rewriting the language of mathematics, so to say. And I will be putting some of that work out as well, but one thing at a time. But what I realized was that math is just a language like any other language, meaning it's not an absolute truth. So up until now, it's been a philosophical argument that math, you know, a lot of people look to math almost like that it's this solid language that it's irrefutable in a way. Many mathematicians and physicists see it as this, you know, like God's language, so to say. But what I've been able to do is mathematically prove the limitations of math. And in other words, math has no intrinsic value. If you take any number, you could take the number 3. It has no meaning unless it's relative to another number. Now, it turns out in math, every number is relative to the number 1. So even though we write 3, we write it's really 3 relative to 1, because 3 relative to 3 is 1. The same thing with pi. They're all shorthand symbols to create concepts. But the bridging of the gap was just to show that no matter what scientists and mathematicians might think, that their very language is limited. So there is no absolute truth in what they're doing either. And I'll prove this to them, both in a mathematic and science way, so that they've kind of come up with their own religion in a way, math and science. You know, they're looking for an answer in the universe, or so to say, but they are the universe itself. And this is non-dualism, and this is the concept that's not confronted in Western science, is that we ourselves, as human beings, are woven into the very universe itself. So when we look at the universe, it's the universe gazing at itself through our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, everything that makes up our minds and our eyes or what have you, we're forged in the very stars or what have you that we're looking at. We're filled with air and water, and everything that makes us up is from the existence itself. So we are the existence itself. And this could also be proven because even all the measurements that are taken of the universe in the radio frequency background, we're in that measurement as well. So if you look at any satellite picture today, know that you're looking at yourself too, because next to that hurricane system, also in that image are human beings. So we're the universe as well, whether we knew it or not. This is the truth.
I would think that, Dr. Jeffrey, you're not so good at water cooler conversation, are you? You're the kind of person, though, I'd love to have at my dinner party. I just find
exactly.
After a glass or two of wine, having that conversation
exactly.
would be so much fun.
Yeah, water coolers are pretty fun.
So I guess my
I like my water very cold all there. But like you say, my parents don't particularly like me. In general, I can be deep, but I can be light as well. But I think it was this deep portion of me that enabled me to go that far into myself in the first place.
I think so,
and,
surely, yeah.
And find something, and like you say, it'll be interesting conversations down the line with mainstream
yes.
Psychiatry and psychology. But in the end, I'm really here not to challenge people. I'm more just to help people in any way I can.
After going on this journey, did you feel like it was harder to relate to, sort of, I want to call them like the average person? Because you felt like maybe you felt, I know you talked a little bit about this in your book, like, you know, more enlightened or.
Well, enlightenment, and this is where I got thrown off track, so that's a very good question. Part of the reason I was seeking the state called enlightenment, now, I thought that you can get to enlightenment. But all enlightenment really is it's a state of being when you know yourself to be part of all that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the enlightenment. And knowing that so enlightenment's more just a state of being, or it's a realization, because you never get anywhere. You just come to the realization, wow, the present moment's the only moment that exists, and I am a part of the existence. And then that's the enlightenment, and then life goes on. And so there's, and you know yourself to be the same as everyone else and everything else. So kind of that's the enlightenment, and then the beingness of just goes on. So that was, that's kind of what I learned, but like you said before, what I really had to do, and this was the twist of it, is that modern society is a learned behavior set. So when I was so far into myself, quote-unquote, I had no more knowledge of what was going on in the outside world. I was so heavy into my own mind-created world that I didn't know who was president. I didn't know anything except for what my mind was showing me. So I lost complete touch with reality. And then I had to relearn society once again, pretty much from scratch. And now I'm able to talk about it. So this is why it took complete isolation to do this inward journey. And in the end, I'm hoping that I can at least try my best to teach people what I've learned so that I can help them to help themselves.
So I want to ask, we're almost out of time, and so I want to pause for a second. We're going to make way for a sponsor, but I want to know, while during the little break, I want you to think about maybe what you would like our audience to know, maybe a couple things that you feel are super important and kind of your parting words. So hang tight.
Are you frustrated by the tremendous challenges that so many millions of people face in your dating life? If you are, we have your solution. Come talk to me, Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book Getting Back on Top, and my website, secondchanceatromance.com. We can help you. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them.
Thanks again, Ian Oliver, for being our sponsor. We so appreciate it. And we are here with Dr. Jeffrey Fidel, who is talking to us about his journey into oneness with himself. That's really a beautiful story. So as Kelly mentioned, can you give us maybe two or three takeaways for our audience to just sort of be able to just hold on to and
think about?
Thank you. Sure. Thanks for finishing my sentence, Kelly.
So some of the things that I'd like to share would be, one is I think we must come to the realization that if we hold anger inside of ourselves towards another person, now of course this is our mind's perception of anger, towards another person, which would be internal anger, or if we hold anger inside of ourselves towards ourselves, which would be guilt, in other words, not the ability not to forgive ourselves, then in the end, we're going to be the only one that suffers from this. So we must come to that realization now and not wait until the end of our lives when we die, and then we're going to say to ourselves, man, I was angry my whole life. So by coming to the realization now, we can hopefully begin to forgive within ourselves, because it serves us no purpose to hold this anger in. We'll be the only one that suffers from that. Maybe teaching number two would be to know that the present moment is the only moment that exists. And the more we can bring our mind's attention into the moment of now, the more we get to enjoy life, because if we're eating a slice of pizza or something and our mind is thinking about what movie we're going to be seeing later that day, we're not enjoying what's right before us. And this can become habitual when the mind gets engrossed in thoughts outside of what it is we're doing at the time. So to bring more awareness to the present moment is another very important thing. And then number three, I think, is kind of what we had just explored, was the to not be afraid of ourselves. In other words, to allow ourselves to feel certain things, even to cry. There's nothing wrong with crying or expressing ourselves. As a guy, we might be, that's weak to cry. But, one of the things that I was able to do was actually to get out of that societal belief system and allow myself to cry and feel once again. And the very act of feeling, there's a lot of healing in this. So these are certain things that I hope your audience might be able to take away and maybe practice.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. I was just thinking too, ladies out there, you know, we all know that any guy who cries is very sexy. So don't stop yourself from crying.
Well, thank you
thank
so
you,
much.
Thank you, Dr. Jeffrey Fidel. And people can go to your website to find out more about you and your book at jeffreyfidelmd.com, JeffreyFidelMD.com.
And then if you search on Amazon, I was looking at it too, because I know we talked about that. You should probably search under his name. It's a little bit easier to find. So Jeffrey Fidel, and it'll come up.
Thanks for your beautiful insights and for you sharing your journey.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Deborah, and thank you, therapist Kelly.
Bye-bye. Okay. And next week, we have actually our sponsor, Ian Oliver, is coming on the show. He's going to co-host, and it'll be just a surprise bunch of stuff we'll talk
about.
We're going
to have a great time.
Yes.
I think between the three of us, I'm scared. It's going to be a lot of fun energy.
All right. We love y'all. Thank you.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.